This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, good morning. Happy Friday to everyone. I'm Jeremy Kitchen, Capitol correspondent here at Texas Scorecard, doing my best to fill in for Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Scorecard. Welcome to The Headline. It's been a weird week, really a weird last few weeks, if you will, with regard to the ongoing special legislative session, what have you. We've got quite a bit to talk about today. We're going to talk about the House GOP caucus press conference that occurred Monday. We're going to talk about the kind of litany of mask mandates from local jurisdictions defying Governor Abbott's executive order and the confusion that's sowing for Texans all around the state. We're going to talk about the upcoming election cycle that's already underway and candidates that have announced, even though they don't know the districts they potentially are running for. And then we're going to talk about the House finally obtaining a quorum and being able to conduct some legislative business. So we'll get right into it here. Let us know. Talking about the House Republican Caucus held a press conference on Monday after they realized yet again, that they did not have quorum. They've held, I guess, three or four press conferences over the course of the last two special legislative sessions. Once again, they continued messaging and talking about kind of the lack of consideration for things like a 13th check or additional check, if you will, for beneficiaries under the teachers' retirement system of Texas. They talked about protections for children that are going through the Texas foster care system, and they talked about bail reform and funding for virtual education, things that they can't necessarily consider because at that time, House Democrat lawmakers were not there. Notably lacking, however, seemed to be concern for things that are GOP legislative priorities like election integrity or things that they are constantly hearing from, that we're hearing from, which is Texans concerned about their property tax burdens and actually trying to get some tangible relief. And so they did not mention those things. The notable thing, however, was when the caucus chairman, Jim Murphy, a Republican out of Houston, was asked by reporters at the press conference how he felt or whether absent lawmakers would in fact be arrested. This is what he said.
The likelihood of, Mr. Chair, of an arrest? I mean, is that a real possibility? Will arrest be made?
I don't know if they're going to go to that level. At this point, it's more like a jury summons, a paper that's delivered, and that'll be another conversation down the line.
Pretty amazing. I mean, I hear from Texans almost every day as to why has the House, specifically Republican leadership, not done anything to compel absent Democrat lawmakers to come back, right? They have the ability, obviously. I mean, you saw Speaker Phelan issue some arrest warrants, if you will, last week, but no one had been arrested. No one had been arrested and brought back to the Capitol to do their job. And there you have the House GOP caucus. They're compelled to come back to Austin, which I highly doubt any absent lawmaker didn't already know that. The other interesting thing, he was also asked a question from a lawmaker about whether or not, what is Republican leadership going to do to compel these lawmakers to come back? I mean, will they have to compromise on anything to get their buy-in? This is what he said.
So I would say on every matter, and I would ask their own experience to be their guide, they've seen this House compromise. What's in a bill, what bills move forward, and that's absolutely a possibility once they're here. They need to get here to make that happen. But it's right at our doorstep.
Absolutely amazing. I mean, you have the House Republican Caucus Chairman essentially admitting that in order to bring Democrat lawmakers back and the conversations that they're having, they're going to have to compromise. I mean, you have Republicans continuing to negotiate against themselves, and you've got many GOP party activists asking why. I mean, you've got the GOP controls the state legislature and state offices, yet they're capitulating to Democrats, seemingly. It's absolutely amazing. Notably as well, absent lawmakers still retain their chairmanships, their vice chairmanships, their committee membership, and seniority privileges. You saw it there, absolutely amazing. Let's kind of switch gears here and let's talk about the ongoing confusion, if you will, around mask mandates. Specifically, you had Governor Abbott give an executive order in July where it kind of consolidated all of his previous executive orders, reiterating that he is prohibiting any mask mandate to include, right, at the public school level for children. Obviously, that's an issue that's extremely important as schools this week have started to kind of go back into session to start their fall semester. So to talk about that, let's bring in Jacob Asmussen, a senior journalist here at Texas Scorecard. Thanks for joining us, Jacob.
Thanks.
Can you walk us through kind of a timeline, this confusing, maybe week, 2 week timeline on what's happened?
Yeah, well, the story really began last year when Governor Greg Abbott started issuing a lot of executive orders,
sure.
You know, things like closing down businesses, mandating masks, right? All these kinds of things that stirred up a lot of controversy. Well, fast forward to July, where he issued a different order saying, okay, well, now local officials across the state cannot force citizens to wear masks.
Sure.
But in the past couple weeks, we've seen local officials across the state, school districts, mayors, county judges say, you know what? We're going to defy that order,
sure.
And we're going to issue our own orders and say, you know what? Kids do have to wear masks in school, right?
Sure.
We do want to force face coverings on kids. And so that has sparked this whole fight between Abbott's orders, between the local officials' orders. Local officials went and got a district judge,
right,
to allow them to continue their orders. The feud quickly escalated to the Texas Supreme Court,
sure,
which then sided with Abbott, which then led to yesterday when the Texas Supreme Court issued another ruling siding against Abbott for a technicality for now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bottom line is, there's a whole lot of confusion right now of,
sure,
who is in charge, whose order has authority, who do we listen to? Texans are left confused, wondering,
sure,
what's going on and who has authority in the state.
And schools have already started. I mean, you've seen just a litany of school districts that maybe started, like, or initially kind of leading up had met, signaled to parents that there's no mask mandate. We're not, you know, that we are going to comply with the executive order. And then, like, it seems like over the last week or so, suddenly because it's popular, maybe especially amongst the larger school districts or larger jurisdictions that have upon this HISD or Houston ISD, Dallas, right? These sorts of things where it's just kind of, it just opened the floodgates,
yeah,
if you will, to now there is, to your point, this juxtaposition of just weird mandates all across the state that aren't uniform. Okay, and so you had mentioned, I guess, yesterday that the Supreme Court had done a temporary there's a quote-unquote, supply the next week, 2 weeks, but I think it's important to note that school, it's ongoing. I mean,
right,
a lot of school districts started schools this week, and you've got parents. We hear from them all the time.
Yeah.
Parents that are confused.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you have a lot of health experts across the nation, across the world, mm-hmm, warning against forcing masks on kids. I mean, you even have the Irish Health Authority calling it child abuse. You have different health experts, and we've written lots of stories about this at TexasScorecard.com,
yeah,
where different health experts are saying, look, this is not helping to stop the transmission of the virus, and it's very harmful for kids developmentally,
sure,
to be wearing masks all day long.
Sure.
So you have that issue. But furthermore, in Texas, the state legislature could have clarified this issue months ago,
sure,
by passing an actual state law that,
right,
says, look, you cannot force masks on kids, but they chose not to do that. So now we're left in this nebulous limbo world of governor's executive orders versus local,
sure,
executive orders, and Texans are confused.
I think it's worthwhile kind of explaining that, right? So during the regular session, actually the lead up to the regular session, you had a bunch of lawmakers, especially conservative lawmakers, that took to Twitter, took to social media to talk about their frustration that because they weren't in session, they felt like they couldn't represent their constituents, and they kind of felt like, without directly implicating Abbott, felt like, you know, it's ridiculous that you have the executive branch decreeing these things, right? Like, as to your point earlier, before having a prohibition on mask mandates, Abbott mandated masks, right, just a year ago. And, you know, so you have this kind of weird thing that's happening. Fast forward to the regular session when they had the opportunity to do so. You had people like Matt Schaefer file a bill that never got a hearing in House State Affairs Committee that would have prohibited this. You had an amendment come on to the big Texas Pandemic Response Act by Representative Burroughs. The amendment was authored by Cody Vassut out of Angleton. That passed and then very oddly, like, nothing got done at
right,
the end of the regular session. So here we are, fast forward to now, when you have this very odd phenomena that is these local governments defying Abbott's orders when they were kind of complicit with him when he had his mandate right back a year ago. Absolutely fascinating.
Right, obviously. And the issue is quickly escalating, not only with masks, but now to forced vaccines.
Right,
right. We're starting to see that percolate across the state, where you have people like Austin Mayor Steve Adler, Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins, who have tossed out the idea, you know, if I could, I'd like to force all the city employees to get injected with a shot. So this, you know, this is a very important issue, and it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, you've got the federal government obviously opining on this too. I think President Biden had made something to the effect of basically impugning Texas's response to this sort of thing. I think it's worth noting too, in the ongoing special session, we'll talk about quorum here in a second, but there are bills again filed to this effect, right? Schaefer again filed his bill prohibiting outright, hasn't been referred yet. You had someone like Jeff Kasin, a Republican out of Bedford, filed a bill specifically prohibiting this for schools, hasn't been referred yet. You had on the opposite side of that, we have an article about this as well up on texasscorecard.com, where you had the chairman of the House Public Education Committee, Harold Dutton, filed a bill that basically says, the executive orders mean nothing. Let's allow school districts to make this decision. You had the former House Speaker Pro Tem, Joe Moody, file a bill that says that, you know, executive orders cannot prohibit mask mandates, right? And of course, neither of these bills have been referred. But it's an interesting fight that's taking place, at least behind the scenes, in the legislature. It'll be interesting to see if they do anything about it, given that this is just consuming Texas politics right now. So, okay, Jacob, well, thank you for that. Obviously, that's something we're going to stay on top of here. Let's segue to, as I mentioned, there are already, so we've been told since the beginning, the spring time, that because of a delay in census, right, and that was due to canvassing due to COVID-19 under President Trump, kind of going into President Biden's administration, just delay after delay. Well, that data came out last week or the week before, finally, and that process, even though it hasn't officially been scheduled, it's long been rumored that there's going to be an October special session dedicated to redistricting. What's notable about that, right, is that when redistricting happens, districts will be changed, right? The boundaries of districts will be changed, especially on the state level as far as state Senate districts and state House districts. Normally, you have lawmakers or candidates for those offices kind of wait to see what those districts are going to look like, but we've already got several candidates announced for incumbent lawmakers or against incumbent lawmakers. Let's kind of talk through those very briefly here. We've got Republicans that have challenged Democrats in seats that are that I guess have been targeted before. They've, you know, always kind of been within the margin of error, a few points here or there. These are districts that just flipped Democrat, for instance, right? An example of that is James Tallarico, a Democrat out of Round Rock, now has two Republican challengers. He has a woman named Carolyn Harris and a man named Nelson Jaron. Both are were legislative staffers for state senators. They have announced challenging James Tallarico. Of course, Tallarico being someone who was an absent Democrat lawmaker who's now returned. You have Aaron Zwiener again being challenged by Carrie Isaac, as she was last cycle. You have Vicki Goodwin out of Austin being challenged by Justin Berry, just as she was last cycle already. You know, that's interesting in itself, but then you also have primary challengers, right? These are Republicans challenging Republicans. We don't know when the primary election date is going to be necessarily. You have someone like State Senator Seliger, who is from the Amarillo area. He's been challenged by Stormy Bradley in his district, challenged by Dewey Collier. You have Scott Sanford from the McKinney area being challenged by Jim Herblin. You've got notably, Jacob, Stephanie Click, who's being challenged by two folks, David Lowy and David Sylvie. Obviously, we've talked about Representative Click several times on this show with relation to gender modification. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, looking at that whole field tells me that citizens are not happy with some of their lawmakers.
Sure.
And you mentioned Stephanie Click. You know, Stephanie Click, a Republican, chairman of a powerful committee.
Yeah, the House Public Health Committee.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She was one of the key players earlier this year in stopping a proposed child protection law related to protecting children from gender mutilation surgeries. Mm-hmm. And we have all those stories at TexasScorecard.com.
We've talked about it on the show. So
absolutely. Sure. And so you see some of these challengers, like you said, these lawmakers who have never had other Republicans challenge them before, now seeing opposition. And so that's very telling to me.
Sure. You've got a few more. Cecil Bell Jr., who's from, the Montgomery County area, Magnolia area, has his first challenger, Kelly McDonald. And notably, you have Dan Huberty, who is an interesting Republican in his own right, was the former House Public Education Committee chairman, anti-school choice, someone who was one of the few Republicans that actually signed on to the Medicaid expansion bill, if you will, this past session. He was challenged many months ago, still obviously being challenged by Anthony Giolchifino, who's a former Houston City Council candidate there. It's interesting. I mean, to your point, it seems like there's certainly, and we'll see how it plays out, but some retribution within their own party as to why are you not focusing on Republican Party priorities, right?
Right. And we've seen that with the state legislature this year. They didn't address a number of the Republican Party of Texas priorities, right? And so it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially given that we don't even know the districts yet. And so we don't even know when the election will be.
For that, we'll kind of pivot here to kind of the most notable thing that's happened, obviously, for everyone that's just been waiting with bated breath, if you will. Like for us, for instance, you know, watching this yesterday, the House of Representatives, after 37 days of being paralyzed, unable to conduct legislative business, finally obtained a quorum yesterday. Notably, they were scheduled to convene or gavel in once again after standing at ease at 4 p.m. yesterday. After almost 2.5 hours, they finally gaveled in with quorum, barely having quorum, right at 99. They only needed 99, not 100, because as of yesterday, the resignation of Leo Pacheco, a Democrat from San Antonio, went into effect. And then, of course, they already had the vacated seat by former State Representative Jake Elzey, who won the congressional seat out of House District 10. So because of that, that was 150 members. It got lowered to 148. Quorum became from 100 to 99. You had three notable Democrats that returned you had Garnett Coleman from Houston, you had Ana Hernandez also from Houston, and Armando Wally from Houston all returned to make quorum. As soon as they made quorum, they immediately started referring some of the bills, notably not all of them, to committees, and then they adjourned and will not reconvene until Monday at 4 p.m., right? Okay, so fast forward now. Of course, if you recall, the Senate has already passed almost all of the bills again for the second time on Governor Abbott's agenda. So they've kind of been waiting for the House to do something, for the House to get quorum. So the House got quorum. They referred bills. They already have. They already had one meet today, actually. There are some bills that were referred to committees that have at least been scheduled for committee hearings. The House Select Committee on Constitutional Issues and Remedies, this is that new committee that Phelan stood up before the first special session. They met this morning on bail reform, a bail reform bill. They had already passed that out. They met this morning on a primary elections delay bill, kind of like what we had talked about earlier. They've already passed that out. They're meeting again tomorrow, notably meeting on the bail reform bill. What's notable about that is obviously two of those things, bail reform and election integrity, were emergency legislative items of Governor Abbott's that died, right, and kind of spawned this whole thing at the end of May. So they're moving quickly on those. They've also already scheduled some meetings, not to get too in the weeds here, but meetings on things like restoring funding for the legislature, something that Abbott, of course, employed his line item veto power for. They have a meeting scheduled for that in the House Appropriations Committee. They're, of course, prioritizing the 13th check for teachers or beneficiaries under the teacher retirement system. That's got a hearing scheduled. They've got hearings scheduled on the Senate's version of what they're dubbing as property tax relief bills already in the House Ways and Means Committee. And then they have the House Public Education Committee, and this is notable, Jacob. They're scheduled to meet Tuesday, and they're going to talk about the critical race theory bills, both Steve Toth's version, which is House Bill 28. Of course, he was the author of the overall House Bill 3979 during the regular session. And then the Senate version, which is the quote-unquote improvements to the ban, Senate Bill 3. They're going to discuss that. On the same day, they're going to be discussing youth sports bill, SB2, and the family violence bill, and then virtual education. Talk briefly about the youth sports bill, right? So what's notable there is obviously this is something that passed the Senate in the regular session. It passed in the first special session. Kind of had a weird legislative journey. In the regular session, in that the chairman of the House Public Education Committee originally said there was no votes for it, right, and then passed it abruptly. You want to talk about that briefly?
Yeah, so the bill itself is a protection for women's sports. The bill would require students to compete on athletic teams for their biological sex, right? Women on women's teams, right. Men on men's teams. To protect women from having men cross over into their sports and compete on their teams. And this has been a problem across the nation, right? Women have lost athletic opportunities, scholarships, various opportunities for the spring legislative session, but ultimately failed in the Texas House, like a number of other
sure.
priorities.
Sure.
And that's really kind of the main storyline here, is that all of the remaining priority proposed laws, you know, things like protecting women's sports, protecting children from these genital mutilation surgeries, right, property tax relief, yeah. election security, right, they all get funneled into the Texas House and yeah. died, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, let's not forget, we wouldn't even be in this dramatic political theater situation today in the Texas House of Representatives if they had just used their majority power
sure.
a month ago to wrangle Democrats
sure.
in. And we wouldn't even be in that position
sure.
if they had just done their work in the spring,
absolutely
right? They have
true.
The power, like you said earlier. They control all of the state
yeah.
government, right? And yet they chose not to get the people's work done.
Sure. And unfortunately, Texans, we've just kind of been watching the circus, if you will, right, kind of play out. It's worth noting, to kind of put a cap on all this, right, that, of course, okay, they have a quorum. There's committees already meeting, right? It's important to note that they don't have all 150 members. And if you ask Republicans, I'm sure they don't want all 150 members, right? They're perfectly fine. Look, we've got a quorum, a minority of Democrats there. We can at least conduct business, probably less strenuous on them, right? But it's going to be interesting to see the order by which they take up bills, because as of right now, they've done nothing to stop those same Democrats from leaving again, right? It's kind of this tenuous position. And so the next week, probably, the next few days certainly will be interesting to see. I mean, you know, but they originally left because of supposedly the omnibus election integrity bill, right? Back in May, again, in the first called special session 5 days in. Well, that bill's getting a hearing again, right? And of course, notably, it's a different bill. But that bill's getting a hearing again. I wonder what's going to be compromised on, to go back to what we talked about earlier with the GOP caucus chairman, to keep these Democrat lawmakers there. It'll be fascinating. You may recall in the first special session, there was one arrest warrant that was issued, notably issued after he got permission from the same person that issued it to leave. And of course, they issued them, I believe, last week for several of those absent Democrat lawmakers, got tied up, and a bunch of, you know, lawyers got involved, or the judiciary got involved. And to my knowledge, no one got arrested. And there are still absent Democrat lawmakers. It's important to note that. And some of those happen to be chairmen. Some of those happen to be vice chairmen, right? Very senior Democrats are still absent from the House. And so as of right now, no penalties have been exacted at all on any of those folks. Do some quick shout-outs. Appreciate folks watching today. We've got Rob from Fort Worth. Thanks so much for watching. Marty from Texas. Aaron from Allen. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. There is a lot happening. Of course, you can rest assured we're, of course, going to stay on top of that and try to best communicate. It's confusing times. It's silly times, frankly. To your point, a lot of this stuff could have been handled in the regular session if they would have efficiently used their time, employed their partisan majority, but seemingly couldn't do that. Some brief announcements here, of course. We've got our Conservative Leader Awards on December 4th in Irving, Texas. You can find, I believe there's some links in the comments for the early bird pricing that's going on right now. There at TexasScorecard.com. And then, of course, nominations are open. If you know someone who you believe is worthy of a Conservative Leader Award, get those nice sabers and everything. Make sure to nominate them on there. We've, of course, ongoing applications for our fellowship program here at Texas Scorecard. We're taking applications now for the spring, summer, and fall 2022. Fellowship. So make sure to check that out. If you know someone who would be interested in that, we'd love to have them here. We'd love to kind of get people plugged into the conservative movement. And then, of course, a shameless plug for my show, because it's just stuff that's going to happen. Check out all our shows, obviously, at scorecard.com. But we'll have a new episode of This Week in Texas, or not happening. And it's been an odd last few weeks to cover. But thank you all for joining us. I know that was a lot. Hope you all have a great weekend, and I'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.